live from the Fox News Radio Studios in New York City. Fresh off the set of Fox and Friends, it's America's receptive voice, Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Mary Walter sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. Brian in Virginia. You've seen him all over Fox. He's at a diner. They have the primaries going on in Virginia. So I'm sitting in the seat for Brian. And one of the big issues in Virginia, as you know, is schools and school choice and what was happening to our kids during COVID. And they really kind of lit the fire under all of that. So who best to start the show off with than Betsy DeVos, the former education secretary and the author of a new book out called Hostages No More, The Fight for Education Freedom and the Future of the American Child. So timely. Betsy DeVos, thank you for joining me.
Well, Mary, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
I have a stack of things to talk to you about because this is such a hot topic now. You know, in your book, you talk about curriculum transparency, something that parents up until COVID had no clue what their kids were learning in school. And I blame the parents for that. You know, school choice, super hot right now. The president deciding whether he's going to extend, you know, student debt forgiveness. And all of that is addressed in this book. What I wanted to start out with you, though, is an interesting thread that I found on Twitter. So please bear with me as I tell you about what this young man had to say. He's 18 years old. And so he says, you know, 5 years ago, I was in junior high school. And he says, imagine you're an eighth grade boy. You're beginning to be told by teachers, the media, and maybe your parents that you're privileged because you're a boy. It's a basic truth. If boys are privileged, though, why do the girls in my class get better grades? Why are there more girls than boys in my advanced classes? Why are the girls more well-behaved and focused? Why are some of the girls preparing for college applications early? And he says, and then I fast forward, it's a really long thread, so I just cherry-picked it to get the gist of it. He says, by the time you get to high school, your confusion only grows. Your friend who you used to go to church with has become addicted to porn. Another friend whose parents have recently divorced has started using drugs. Your friends start appearing unmotivated and demoralized. Meanwhile, the girls continue to be overrepresented in honors classes, get better test scores and grades. And then he says college acceptances come out. You notice more girls than boys get into top university. More girls are going to college in general. But for some reason, all you hear is that girls are underrepresented in higher education, and it's confusing. When you start to search for college scholarships, you find hundreds that are open to only women. And you do research and you start to discover that men are more likely to become homeless, to go to prison, to become alcoholics, to struggle with isolation and loneliness, die of drug overdose and commit suicide. But all you hear about for some reason is something called the gender pay gap. And then he says, now do all of that and assume you're a white, eighth grade white boy. So on top of the alienation you experience for merely being a boy, you're told by teachers, the media, and maybe even your parents that you should feel some form of remorse for being white. You're as privileged as it gets. It just doesn't make much sense to you. Why should you feel bad for being white? Something you can't control. And he ends it by saying, as you get older, you feel increasingly unwelcome by society. So you turn to the internet where you feel welcome by video games and right-wing forums. Younger and younger white males are following this path. They feel they're simply unwelcome by society, and they escape to a select few communities and websites. For the first time in America's history, the founding demographic is dropping out of society in massive numbers. I thought that that thread, and as I said, there's a whole lot more to it, but that just encapsulates basically what his journey has been. Why are we doing this to our boys in our schools? This is institutionalized.
Well, Mary, it's a very good question. And the question more broadly is, why are we continuing to do to our kids what the system has done for over 175 years, put all of them into a one-size-fits-all box? This last 2 years, parents and grandparents and friends and neighbors have had a front-row seat to the failings of a system that many of us have known long before the pandemic hit. And what has happened is it's been, you know, all of the failings have been laid bare in a way that has aroused parents' interest and ire and determination to do something different and better on behalf of their kids. You know, the months and months of lockdowns, the mandates, the in and out of in-person distance learning, the critical race theory, and all the other curriculums that parents viewed firsthand coming into their homes, the sexualization of young children, these things and others have continued to raise up this issue, the issue of education and the future of our children, in a way that I've never seen in the 35 years I've been involved with advocating for kids and their futures. And I believe it's a good and prime moment for policy change that will support parents' ability to direct and control their children's education.
And that's what parents want. So how did we get here? How were parents so asleep until COVID, when they started seeing what was being taught to their kids, because the kids was in they were in the kitchen, and so they could hear what was being taught? How did parents not know until then?
Well, let's be honest. There's many, many parents across the country who have moved to good, quote unquote, good districts, to good locations. They've paid higher prices for homes to do it, to put their kids in schools that they thought were going to train, educate them well, and get them prepared for adulthood. But the reality is that well before the pandemic, there were a lot of warning signs, and many of us have been seeing them for years. Students not being prepared, not actually learning the things that they need to learn for a successful adult future, but instead being, being subject to a lot of these theories and a lot of the teaching and a lot of the curriculum that is not core to their ability to function as adults, and in many cases is antithetical to what the family values are.
Yeah, absolutely, which is why I think you're seeing, as we're seeing since the pandemic, this rush to private schools, to Catholic schools, to get the kids into an area that is going to teach more towards their values.
Well, and Mary, during the pandemic, again, many families who chose to move to good areas, quote unquote, saw their schools remain closed while many of the charter and private faith-based schools opened back up. And they're saying, what's up with this? Why aren't our kids getting back into the classroom where they need to be? And and the ones who were kept out the longest and have the most lasting negative impact are the ones who are the most vulnerable.
Did the left overplay its hand, as they often do? I mean, they push, but they're smart. They'll push for a mile, but they'll take a yard, these incremental gains that we have seen over time. They're smart in that way. Have they overplayed their hand, though, in this time? Because when it comes to kids, I've been saying this for years now, when it comes to your children, it doesn't matter whether you have a D or an R after your name. This is something that brings everyone together, because now you're talking about my kids, and only the far left are going to be okay with the whole whiteness and CRT and all of that stuff. But everybody else, they're not for this. Do you see enough of a groundswell from the American people for a pushback to have change?
Well, I do. I do see the intensity and the attention that's being paid to what is actually happening. And then, many parents who want to go and ask questions of their schools, and they go to the school board meetings, and then they are, publicly ridiculed or castigated, and, to the point of being called and referred to as domestic terrorists, with the FBI being sent in to investigate. I mean, these things, is the system and headed up by the school unions overplaying? They have continued at every step to be on the side of their interests in a system rather than the children that they're supposed to be serving. And families have awakened to this, and many beyond families have awakened. And we're seeing moves in states across the country to pass legislation, implement policy that is going to give parents the ability to control those resources. And I use the metaphor of a backpack often. Kids go to school every day with a backpack full of the things they need for the day. we need to metaphorically attach to each child's backpack all the resources that are being spent on that child. So on average, we spend about $15,000 per child per year in K-12 education. Some places way more, other places less. But let's just say it's about $15,000. We need to metaphorically attach those monies to that child's backpack and let the parents decide if their assigned school is working for them or not. And if it's not, give them the opportunity to choose a private school or a home school or a learning pod or a virtual school or any combination of those, and let them find the place that their child is going to thrive. That is the imperative now.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are so many things that I know you wanted to do that you didn't get to do as the education secretary. And we're going to talk about some of that as well. School choice. And also, I'd like to explore this exodus of teachers from our system. And now we don't have enough of them. And that is a problem as well. It seems almost like a perfect storm. More with former education secretary Betsy DeVos coming up on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So when people talk about CRT, it's not saying slavery didn't exist. Right. It's not saying that we didn't have Jim Crow. What should people know when they talk about CRT?
Well, critical race theory is a lens through which things are viewed. So it's a theory that they instruct teachers to look at, which is, you know, the myth of meritocracy, colorblindness. You know, we don't want to do colorblindness anymore. We want race consciousness and the permanence of racism. We discovered from the Pacific Educational Group, which is one of these equity consultants, they had a whole list of things that they presented to the different school system in Pennsylvania. And they talk about things that are habits of whiteness. It's, you know, hard work, the scientific method, being polite. Look, those are things for everybody, right? I mean, it's racist to assume that that's just somebody that's white. I mean, it's appalling.
Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade. You heard Brian there with Ian Pryor in Virginia today. Brian's down there for the Virginia primaries. And, you know, Ian was one of those people who was really at the forefront of this explosion of parents getting involved, being outraged of what their kids were learning during the pandemic. And I'm here with the former education secretary, Betsy DeVos. Welcome back. She also has a new book out called Hostages No More, The Fight for Education, Freedom, and the Future of the American Child. You heard Ian Pryor there, you know, talking about colorblindness. And when we started this out, I read that thread to you from an 18-year-old young white man talking about how damaging it is that we're telling our young boys that they're privileged. And if you're white, you have the ultimate in privilege, and how they kind of drop out of society because they felt like they're not welcome. Why are we doing this? And the other part of this, to me, it's very racist to tell our black children that, you know, oh, well, you know, it. Being polite is white, so you don't want to be polite. You don't want to be on time. Those are things that set you up for failure in life.
Well, all of these, whatever iteration of critical race theory we're talking about, what it does is serve to set one group of people up against another. And it's bottom line racism, period. And the last thing we need to be doing is encouraging kids to view themselves as something less than, no matter where you come from, no matter the color of your skin, how much your family makes, however way you cut it. What we need to be doing is setting up kids for success and expecting the best from them. Having high expectations around what kids can do and will do is where we should be going. And yet we see the system really dumbing down things in so many cases, or lowering expectations, removing requirements, all in the name of somehow helping kids. That doesn't help kids. And what will help them is ensuring that their families have the opportunity to again, find the right fit for them to get everything from an education and become everything that they can be. You know, the system that we are living with today is 175 years old, and it's fundamentally unchanged from the time it was founded. The title of my book, Hostages No More, is a direct reference to a direct quote from Horace Mann, the founder, the father of our system, 175 years ago, said that educators are entitled to look upon parents as having given hostages to our cause. Our cause, the cause of Horace Mann and the educators. And we've seen in spades today how many places and ways that our children have been held hostage. They need to be freed, and that's what this book is about, how we fix American education. It has great stories from my time in office, but also stories from well before that, 30-some years before that, of advocating on behalf of students and their families to be where they need to be, not in a system that is holding them back or telling them something that they're not, and having them learn to hate themselves.
Now, we're seeing a mass exodus of teachers, as we are from so many professions. People are leaving. I don't know where they're going. I have no clue how people are making money. Someone needs to tell me, because I'm apparently one of the few people still working. But teachers are saying that the veteran teachers just can't take it, and they're leaving in part due to the scale of mental health challenges that students have brought back to the classroom after 2 years of online learning. And I think these mental health problems have been brewing for a long time because of what we are telling our children. Instead of just teaching them, we're indoctrinating them. And for a lot of them, it just doesn't sit right with them.
Sure.
Well, what is your response to this? If you were the education secretary, how would you handle this right now?
Well, absolutely. Teachers have been, it's been tough for teachers the last 2 years as well. And frankly, it's been tough for teachers for many years. You know, while I was secretary, I had two roundtables with teachers who had been teachers of the year in their state or their district. Yet after their year of, going around the state and talking and encouraging others, their colleagues, they came back to their schools and were basically told to get back in the classroom and just do what you did before. And in no way was their, the fact that they were outstanding in what they did leveraged and or celebrated. And so all of these teachers had left the classroom after having been on their victory lap for a year. They had left the classroom. And here, these are great teachers. We need to ensure that great teachers have every opportunity to teach kids, to teach other teachers who can use their mentorship, and to encourage them to find a place and fit that works for them. You know, there have been many teachers who the last 2 years, out of necessity, have gone and, or out of desire, have gone and started working with a small handful of families that decided to homeschool their kids together or, form a little mini school. Those kinds of opportunities need to be continued to develop for teachers, and those need to be viable and good options, and they can be if we move from this stringent one-size-fits-all framework to a framework of education freedom where families and teachers are fully empowered to make the right decisions for their kids.
Absolutely. We're going to do one more segment here, but I do want to address the issue of the mental health crisis and the lack of counselors in schools. That seems to be a complaint across the board, that there aren't enough counselors in schools to handle these kids who have so many, are dealing with so many mental issues, especially after the pandemic. All right, so more coming up with the former education secretary, Betsy DeVos, on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, in these ever-changing times, you can rely on Fox News for hourly updates for the very latest news and information on your time. Listen and download now at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Hey, it's Will Cain, co-host of Fox and Friends Weekend. Join me as I share my thoughts on a wide range of topics, from sports and pop culture to politics and business.
The Will Cain Podcast. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Mary Walter sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. We are here with the former Education Secretary, Betsy DeVos, and I will be taking your calls coming up, 866-408-7669, 866-408-7669. Talking about the mental health crisis, that it just seems to be overrunning this entire generation, and it started before the pandemic. But in a survey from August 2011 to November 2011, 73% of college students reported experiencing some type of mental health crisis during college. I find that hard. I find that just amazing that so many kids are experiencing mental health crises. And how do we address this with our students, especially when the complaint is there aren't enough guidance counselors?
Well, great question, Mary. And again, I think looking at the system and how it responded to the COVID crisis the last couple of years, there seemed to be no anticipation that there would be more need when children got back to school. And when they were deciding to keep kids locked out of school for months on end, no anticipation of the cost, the health cost to children from that perspective. And here today, the system sits with having been allocated $200 billion for COVID relief, most of it untouched and unspent and undesignated for something like this very pressing issue. Now, it seems to me they should have anticipated going back and providing all kinds of resources and support for children. But again, the system has failed the kids it's supposed to serve.
Yeah, and we keep seeing that over and over again, which is why, you know, we played the piece from Ian Pryor with Brian today, you know, and again, Ian being the tip of the spear, really, when it came to that explosion in Virginia of parents going to school board meetings. Could the silver lining in all of this be that parents are now getting involved in their children's education?
I do think it's very much a silver lining, and I think it's also so that policymakers, those who are elected to office at the federal and state and local levels, are paying attention in ways they have not before. They're seeing that parents and all of their families and neighbors and friends are saying, we need something different. This is not working for our kids, and we want to have the ability to control what happens with our kids. We clearly learned, even if we didn't know it before the pandemic, we learned the last 2 years that we've had very little control, if any, with our children's education, and that needs to change. Policymakers are getting the message, and those who don't better wake up.
If you were still the education secretary and you were in the position right now, what is the first thing you would do to change the education system?
Well, the first thing is if I could snap my fingers, I would make sure that the funds for children follow the child to the family so that they are the decision maker, not the funds going to a system or a building, which is how we've traditionally done it. We need to change our mindset around that and know that education is about individual kids. We need to be funding them and letting their families make the decision for them what is best.
Yeah, absolutely. And that idea of school choice, I do think is spreading. And I think that parents, as we just said, are waking up and saying, you know, wait a minute, there's a great school over there, but I have to send my kid to this school because it's based on my zip code. It seems so arbitrary. And maybe, like you said, it worked years ago, but maybe now not so much. The book that I really think if you are a parent, you want to pick up because you really want to check this out. So much is addressed in this book. It's called Hostages No More, The Fight for Education Freedom and the Future of the American Child. And it's available now, correct?
It is indeed. Today's the day.
All right. Today's the day. Parents, if you are worried about your kids' education, you need to pick this book up. It's by Betsy DeVos, the former education secretary. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks so much, Mary. Great to be with you.
866-408-7669 is my number. You heard what Betsy DeVos had to say here. Again, the book is Hostages No More, The Fight for Education Freedom and the Future of the American Child, going on sale today. She talks about, the mental health issues in school, which to me, I am fascinated by the fact that even before the pandemic, so many college-age kids were reporting mental health crises, having had a mental health crisis during college, in their college years. That's shocking to me. You know, college was hard. You know, we partied hard. We studied hard. We worked hard. But, and I, you know, we all had our moments where we broke down because we weren't going to get a test done or the workload was too hard or whatever. But we got through it. And I don't think if you ever asked me if I had a mental health crisis in college, I would say no. But it's trickling down and it's younger and younger. And if you missed it, but when we first started the interview with her, I read her, it was a very long thread on Twitter by an 18-year-old man who is going to college. And he said, you know, 5 years ago, I was in eighth grade. And he talks about the things he was told in eighth grade. He was told, you know, you start being told that because you're a boy, you're privileged. And that the girls, you know, but yet I look around and the girls are doing better in tests. The girls are better behaved. The girls are getting better grades. And then it goes on. And then I get to, you know, high school and I'm told the same thing and that, you know, there's a gender gap. And then because I'm white, I'm told that I have the ultimate in privilege. And he talks about how he saw his friends, his male friends become disconnected and start to withdraw because as a group, especially white boys, young white boys, they're basically told that they're not welcome anywhere. They're not encouraged to achieve because they have privilege. And he's watching the girls succeed. And I'll tell you, I have three nieces. The three of them, you know, got into phenomenal colleges. The youngest, though, because she's white, that came into play unofficially. From what we found out, but you know, she's white. Like, but look at the score, the SAT score. She's insanely brilliant. Yeah. Okay. But she's in a good school. She didn't get her dream school, but she's in a great school, which is fantastic. But they also say, you know, they look down. It's really sad. They do look down on a lot of the boys that they go to school with. They're not serious. Mature. The girls seem to be mature, but they almost seem to be a little too mature. Like they're so focused on learning and achieving. And they're like, the boys aren't serious. Yeah, all they want to do is party. But the boys clearly are doing well because they got into those schools. So I just wonder what we're doing to our young men. And this has been coming for a while. And the mental health crises that we see in schools. She also addresses student loan debt. And you heard the president say that, you know, he's thinking about extending the holiday, the student debt repayment holiday. And whenever I hear this, I think, okay, well, that's good. You didn't have to pay. You haven't had to pay your student loans for 2 years. So if you were taking that money and putting it away, socking it away, you'd be earning interest on it, which is great. And then when you have to repay your student loan, you can get rid of a whole bunch of that debt. In one shot, repaying it shouldn't be a problem for you. So when people are like, oh, I can't repay my student loan debt, I'm like, what have you been doing with the money for the last 2 years? Am I the only one who wonders that? I hear that, I'm like, huh, I don't know. I would think if I got a mortgage holiday for 2 years, in my brain, I would take, and if money was tight, I would take at least half the money that I was supposed to be paying to the mortgage and put it away and not touch it, right? And then when I have to start repaying my mortgage, I have more than enough money to repay my mortgage, right? To start making the payments. I just don't know how many people are doing that. So I don't understand that at all. But all of this she talks about, and she also talks about Title IX and the whole bathroom selection and gender identity and all of that. So I want to get your thoughts, 866-408-7669, 866-408-7669. I'm Mary Walter, and you're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Questioning everything. It's Brian Kilmeade. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So it makes sense that in a moment where we see racist retrenchment, where we see extremist forces on the rise trying to in every way undermine our democracy, that there would be this anti-CRT movement, right? No matter what you think about critical race theory, we need to understand the relationship between critical race theory and white and the replacement theory, that they go hand in hand, because we saw it at the latter part of the 19th century as Jim Crow was taking root and the ideology of Anglo-Saxonism was overrunning the country.
That was Eddie Glaude Jr. on MSNBC. He's a professor at Princeton, and talking about the anti-CRT movement. It's a part of, quote, racist re-entrenchment. I can't, you know, maybe it's because I do this for a living, so I talk about these things all the time, and I have to keep up with all this. I am tired of this changing of the vocabulary and everything else. Half the stuff, the words that are thrown around now, I don't even know what they mean, especially when it comes to like the 47 pronouns and you're no longer heterosexual. It's heteronormative. I'm like, what? Why does everything have to be changed? Why? And I sound like I'm 10,000 years old and I kind of feel that way sometimes. But I think that this is all very exhausting. And if you're a kid in school, this has to be exhausting to you, a parent especially. Oh my gosh, you poor parents. 866-408-7669. We were just speaking with Betsy DeVos, the former education secretary. She has a new book out called Hostages No More, The Fight for Education, Freedom, and the Future of the American Child. And we've been talking a lot about our young boys. And young boys in school are taught that they're privileged. So you're automatically, you know, like, oh, you're privileged and looked down on. But at the same time, and then if they're white, it's even worse. They're not necessary. And there was an excellent Twitter thread by a young man who said, you know, I saw a lot of my peers just drift into drugs and all these other things who were motivated, but we're basically told that we're not welcome anywhere. But the message to the black kids is that you're incapable. Without our help, you're incapable. You have a bigger struggle. It makes them victims. And the whole system, I think, is horrible. But what is happening to our young males, I think, is really, really bad. 866-408-7669. Julie in Gainesville, Florida. Julie, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hi there. Hi.
Hi.
This really struck a chord with me because I was in public education. I started teaching in 1986, and the last 15 years, I have definitely noticed an uncomfortable trend. So as in the elementary school, as school has become more and more academic, we've removed recess and other types of play from the classroom. What I've noticed is that starting in kindergarten, girls for some reason always seem to be about 6 months developmentally ahead of boys. I think this is just a natural tendency. Mm-hmm. And so look, some little girl is assigned to Johnny to help keep him organized and to keep him, you know, where's his pencil, where's his paper, keep his desk clean, and just to keep him on track. And, you know, poor Johnny, by 6 months into the school year, he's starting to feel really inadequate because all the little girls in the classroom seem to understand that A says A as an apple, and he's just not connecting the dots. And so this continues kindergarten, first grade, second grade, and there just becomes this real insecurity in these young boys, and they become very dependent on these girls to help keep them organized, and the girls are excelling very early on.
Yeah, and then on top of that, if you tell them that, well, you're super privileged, they look around and they're like, wait, I'm privileged, but I have a minder. Like, you literally assigned a minder to me, but I'm privileged? How does that work? I think it's a super confusing message to these kids, and they just can't work it out, which I can't blame them. I can't work it out. I don't understand what's happening. So how do you expect a kid who's, you know, 10 years old to figure out that he's privileged, but yet the girls are doing far better than he is, but he's privileged because he's a boy? It doesn't make any sense.
Now, and because we're just not letting boys be boys anymore.
Yep.
And play is so, so important in the classroom. When I taught fifth grade, I was one of the few teachers who allowed my children recess because I knew that after lunch, if those guys didn't have 25 minutes on the basketball court to work out their frustration, I lost them for the rest of the day. They were not going to be ready for social studies and
science.
What?
That is so true, Julie. Thank you so much. That is so true. Getting rid of play, you got to be crazy. Every teacher loved play because the kids just ran themselves into the ground, which they need. Let's quickly go to California. Rebecca, listening on the Fox app. You are on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hello. Thank you, Mary. I just love listening to you. You're wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Go ahead. What did you want to say about Betsy, about boys in school and all that stuff?
All right. Several years ago, I'm going to say about 6 years ago, I had to decide to put my son into high school. So he graduated his eighth grade, and, you know, he hung out. He was very smart. He graduated salutatorian of his class, and he did very well, hung out with the girls because they were all smart, right? Mm-hmm. Those were the ones that got all the attention. So I decided to put him into an all-boys Catholic high school because I wanted him to compete with boys and not so much the girls, because the girls seemed to be getting everything, getting into the better classes and the better teachers. And it was just not fair. Now, I put my son in the same high school that Tom Brady went to, and in San Mateo, Sarah High School. And it's very good. My son graduated with a 4.4. He did excellent.
Great.
Now, here's the caveat. In his senior year, I didn't know this, but he was gay. And he came out on the intercom at school. And this was a different set of, this is an all-boys Catholic high school, mind you. And he was the first one to ever do this. I'm very proud of him. To do this in all-boys Catholic high school is tremendously brave. Tremendously brave.
I've got 1 minute. And, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and he to make a point is he had other challenges when he was with all the boys and being gay, and he had to keep that subdued.
Sure.
And then coming out in his senior year, and it was just, it's just a point where he had to have another challenge, not just fighting girls. Now he had to fight his, you know, being gay.
Right.
You know, and it was a struggle, and it's so hard for these boys, and I feel sorry for all of them.
I do. And thank you for sharing that story. And I'm so happy to hear that, you know, that he was supported by his parents and everything, because I think that's super important. Rebecca, thank you for sharing that. But here's the thing. I don't know. Why do we have to come out on the school intercom to everybody in school? I don't know. We everybody's got to announce their sexual proclivities on, you know, loudly to the public. I don't know why, because I think I would love us to get to the point where no one cares, right? Isn't that the ultimate goal? To get to that point where no one cares. You do you, I'll do me, we'll all be happy. That would be the best in my mind. Wow, that's incredible. I'm Mary Welter. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News radio studios in New York City, fresh off the set of Fox and Friends, it's America's receptive voice, Brian Kilmeade.
Yes, I'm Mary Walter, sitting in the seat for Brian Kilmeade. Brian down in Virginia for the primaries. You saw him all morning on Fox and Friends in one of the diners down there in Richmond. Let's go. Let's talk about the border, shall we? Let's talk about immigration. I also want to talk about gun control as well. And who best to do that? Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director, former congressman from Florida. And he is the author of the books Hold Texas, Hold the Nation, Victory or Death. And also, We Can Overcome, an American Black Conservative Manifesto. You can follow him on Twitter at Alan West. Sir, thank you for joining me on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Mary. It's great to hear your voice.
Oh, well, I'm so happy that you're joining me. I have so many things that I wanted to speak with you about. You have a piece out called A Short Reminder of the History of the Democrat Party in America. And this is so powerful because as I was reading this, I'm like, wow, he's totally right. And you talk about the four S words that sum up the Democrat Party in America: slavery, secession, segregation, and socialism. But then you add another word. It starts with a V. What is that other word?
What? I couldn't hear your last part.
Oh, the other word that you add in there, it's not an S word. It's a V word that has become associated with the Democrat Party.
Well, it's violence. And when you look at what is a common thread between slavery, secession, socialism, and segregation, it's violence. And that's who they are. That's what we see playing out again right now. And I think it's so important, as I, you know, had the quote from George Santayana, we got to study and understand this political party and this ideology and realize that this is about creating fear, intimidation, threats, coercion, and ultimately violence. And that's how they're trying to get their way. And I tried to outline that in that piece.
Yeah, it is a great piece. So where, as I was reading this, I'm like, okay, so where are the Republicans? You know, the Republicans formed their party, as you point out, in 1854 as a single issue party, and that was the abolition of slavery. Republicans today seem to not have any kind of backbone, any kind of spine. And I'm wondering if the leadership in the Republican Party is really no different than the leadership in the Democrat Party.
Well, that's the frustration. As a matter of fact, I think you saw this past week at the Texas GOP convention that Senator John Cornyn was booed because they're sick and tired of Republicans that are going up there, and now they're getting in bed with the progressive socialists for this whole gun control thing and implementing red flag laws, which are a violation of your Second, Fourth, and Fifth Constitutional Amendments. So, you know, I don't know where the courage is with the Republican Party. I don't know where the plan is. I mean, they're talking about give us the majority back in the House and Senate. Well, where's your plan? Where's your contract with America? I know Newt Gingrich is out there writing this new majority thing, but where is McConnell and McCarthy standing up for these principles? And again, why aren't they saying these things about this party? When you look at this organization, Jane's Revenge, that is out there firebombing pro-life pregnancy centers and threatening them, saying that if you don't disband, shut down in 30 days, there are going to be more of it. Well, why aren't we putting pressure on this organization? Why aren't we bringing this to light? Why aren't we saying to Merrick Garland, instead of you sitting back watching the January 6th committee hearings, why don't you deal with them? Why don't you deal with Antifa, which is a domestic terrorist organization, much like the first domestic terrorist organization the Democrats created, which was the Ku Klux Klan.
You know, you have Jim Jordan coming out, and he's the top Republican on the Judiciary Committee. And he said that more than a half dozen whistleblowers have come forward regarding Attorney General Merrick Garland. And if they win the House, they're going to mull impeachment of Garland, and they're going to take action against him. So I keep hearing this, but I kind of feel like Charlie Brown with Lucy holding the football telling me, no, if you give us the majority, we're really going to do something. And then nothing ever gets done. And the Republicans will complain like, well, the Democrats own the media, and if the media doesn't put this stuff out there, then, you know, we really can't do anything. And to me, that is just a load. You may not get it televised, you may not get your hearings televised, but you can still impeach someone, you can still bring people to justice, whether or not the media covers it or not.
Who cares about being televised? I mean, right now, you know, Merrick Garland should probably be gone, going after parents as domestic terrorists, but you don't go after Antifa. Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security, should be gone. You know, I'm here in Texas, and this thing about they are managing the border effectively and efficiently, that's a lie. You've got millions of people. This is an invasion. This is not an illegal immigration issue. He doesn't even keep track of some of the folks that are on the terrorist watch list that have come across that border. So he should be gone. And without a doubt, let me tell you, Joe Biden, you want to talk about treason, you want to talk about impeachable offenses, not about a phone call, but the fact that you are disavowing your constitutional oath to protect the sovereignty of the United States of America. All these things that are being done, especially with our borders, purposeful and intentional. And so we want to see that courage from Republicans. And, you know, maybe, you know, McCarthy and McConnell will read that piece that I put out in a town hall, and maybe they will echo some of those things and start finding their big boy pants.
Well, my husband firmly believes that the Republican Party needs more women, because the women are the fighters. He said, you need more Lauren Boberts. You need more Marjorie Taylor Greens. You need more Elise Stefanik's. They need more women who don't care about being reelected, who will go out there and fight and shine the spotlight on the Democrats, and they don't care. And it seems to me as if a lot of the men you keep mentioning, the McConnell and McCarthy, those two, I personally would love to see them get primaried and booted out because they don't seem to want to do anything except get reelected. That's my humble opinion. Yeah.
Well, I tell you, you look at Myra Flores, who just won a special election down here in Texas. And what did she say? She said exactly what needs to be said. She said the people down here in South Texas are pissed off at the Democrats. And so we need that type of fire. We need those women of Sparta, as someone would go back and talk about, that, you know, stand up and create those warriors and inspire men to be in the gap, because right now the status quo is failing in the Republican Party. And so you got to give people something to vote for, not just say, here's something to vote against. And, you know, everyone knows that this progressive socialist ideological agenda is not good. But what are you going to try to inspire people to vote for? It'd be just the same, Mary, if I'm a commander on the battlefield and we've got a battle coming up and I tell my troops we're not going to develop a plan because the other side's just going to be that bad and we know that they'll fail. Nobody's going to follow me into that battle.
Exactly. It is just so frustrating, and it is one of the reasons I am not a member of the Republican Party, because they let me down so often. And I think that was the lure of Trump, is that he was a fighter, and I think the people really want a fighter and they've been longing for that, and that was the appeal of Trump. I know you had mentioned immigration, and you mentioned the terrorists. Cut 11, Eric, this is Tom Homan on America Reports talking about the gotaways, and nobody seems to talk about them. Here's Tom Homan.
They're in such a hurry to release people. They're not waiting from vetting from the Bureau. As you know, there's a case where they released a male alien from Texas facility. The vetting didn't get back for 2 days. So they released him. When the vetting came back, he was hot on the terrorist watch list. And it took ICE a couple months to locate and arrest him. Now, how many more like that? And I keep going back to the 800,000 gotaways, right? That we know there's 800,000 recorded gotaways because they're on camera or they're on drone traffic. We got videos of them. Border Patrol couldn't respond. They've arrested people from 161 different countries. Some of those countries sponsor terrorism. Terrorists don't want to be arrested. How many of the 800,000 came into this country and there are no expected terrorists going to do us harm?
It's a great question. And they're coming into Texas and Arizona.
Yeah, absolutely right. And we see a huge preponderance of that coming through Texas. These are the ones that are out there in camouflage or dressed in black with backpacks, don't want to get caught. Many of them are coming out there through West Texas because everyone's focused on the family units coming in through the Rio Grande Valley area, you know, Del Rio, Eagle Pass, that area. But let me put this in a comparative analysis. You know, Tom Homan, who I know quite well, he just said 800,000 getaways. The size of an Army light infantry division is about 12,000 soldiers. So you basically have how many times more of a size of an Army infantry division that is coming to the United States of America, and we don't know where they are. That's a very dangerous thing, because when you look at this whole defund the police, when you look at how the left is releasing violent criminals and felons back onto the streets, when you look at the illegal gun operations that are happening here in America, we're setting ourselves up for something that could be very, very bad in the future.
Absolutely. Before I let you go, I know you're big into the NRA, and you're interested in gun issues. We have this bipartisan group that is looking at it being how do I say this? They're looking at, I don't want to say infringing our rights, but maybe curtailing our rights for those of us who are legal gun owners, because a criminal committed a horrible and atrocious crime. The sticking point from what we hear is there seems to be some disagreement over the boyfriend loophole, also known as the red flag laws. And a majority of Americans say they're in support of these red flag laws. Do you think that this bill would pass if it contains some kind of red flag law?
No, because red flag laws are a violation of your second, fourth, and fifth constitutional amendments. And we know how this will end up. And Mary, if you want to look into the case from November 2018 of Gary J. Willis, a 61-year-old man from Ferndale, Maryland, who was shot and killed by police at his doorway because of a red flag law, a warrant that was put out against him. Look, you want to know about a red flag? The shooter in Uvalde, Texas, lived with his grandfather. His grandfather had a criminal record. His grandfather could not possess firearms, nor could he be around firearms. That shooter used his grandfather's address on his 4473 background check form. That should have created a red flag right there. That should have stopped everything right there. So we've got a problem with our system. We got a problem. This is what I want to see. These juveniles that are out there being, you know, violent criminals, put them in the system so that if you're 16 to 17, you're committing some of these acts like the kid down in Uvalde shooting adults with BB guns. When you become 18, it's still there and you're flagged. So that's what I want to see happen, not this thing that's going to put in jeopardy me as a legal, law-abiding, responsible gun owner.
Yeah, the problem I see with this is I look at the restraining orders, you know, because the boyfriend mm-hmm. who may be abusive, and this is what we're talking about with the boyfriend loophole, someone who's been accused of abuse or convicted on abuse. It's a piece of paper, and a lot of them walk right through it, number one. But on the other side of it, I do think that restraining orders are abused themselves when a woman mm-hmm. and women tend to abuse them more than guys do. Sorry, ladies. But, you know, she wants to get even with him. I'm going to get him for cheating on me. So she goes down to the police department. And because she alleges abuse or she's in fear for her life or something along those lines, automatically you get that temporary restraining order. And then there's a cooling yep. off period and you get to go to court. But with a red flag law, your guns are taken away from you. And like that case in Maryland, they came to his door at like 5:30 in the morning. He had no clue yeah. what was going on. He thinks someone's breaking into his house, so he goes down with his gun.
Yes, absolutely right. And the thing that you have to realize, again, I would just ask people to go out there, and you can pull it down online, the ATF form 4473 that you must complete every time you go to purchase a weapon, just the same as me. They don't care I've been a member of Congress. They don't care I was a colonel in the Army. Every time I purchase a weapon, I have to fill out a form 4473. One of the questions is about domestic violence, abuse, or any charges related to domestic violence. And let me tell you how the system failed again in that case. The shooter in Sutherland Springs who shot up the church down there, I believe 2017, he was in the Air Force, was convicted of domestic abuse and domestic violence, and the Air Force did not put him into the system. So guess what? He was able to go out, lie on his 4473 form, and get an AR-15, and then proceeded to shoot up that church. And who stopped it? A trained NRA firearms instructor who was barefoot, Stephen Williford, with an AR-15. So it's not the weapon. We've got a problem with our system and the background, the NICS system especially.
I 100% I agree with you. And I kind of figured you were going to be against the red flag law because I can see a ton of problems.
Yeah.
Having your firearms confiscated. And I just see the left using this now as a weapon against the right because, mm-hmm. you were at the Capitol on January 6th. Even if you were outside, you're an insurrectionist. You're a threat to America. You have firearms. We have the right to now come into your home and take them because you're a threat. So I just see this as a very slippery slope to be used and weaponized by the left. Lieutenant Colonel
Absolutely.
Alan West, thank you for joining me. I appreciate your time. It's always great to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Mayor. God bless you. Have a great day.
God bless you, too. 866-408-7669. 866-408-7669. Your call's coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Challenging conventional thought and wisdom. You're with Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I was out with Border Patrol. This was actually last night in the early morning hours, and just groups after groups, massive groups that were coming across. The majority were families, children, as you see in those videos there. And this is only one small area along the border in Stark County, which is the further southern part of Texas. And just massive groups coming across. And this is during the late night hours. That particular group, when I was there, end up being over close to 100 plus. Prior to that, Border Patrol encountered another group of over 100. But the important thing to understand, though, when we talk about how federal resources are so tied up and overwhelmed, that particular group, it took six agents to process those individuals. So they were pulled off the lines, and they were stuck there processing those immigrants. And while that was taking place, you have the single adults, the runners, that are trying to get by.
That was Lieutenant Chris Oliveras on Fox and Friends Weekend talking about the surge on the border. Excuse me, the number of people just coming across. And I saw, I want to say it was on Fox, they said that the number of unaccompanied minors, children that have just been sent across the border by their parents with a coyote or smuggled across across the border would fill Anaheim Stadium. Who's raising these kids? I mean, we're paying for them. But obviously, if you take it, you know, look 18 years down the road, those kids are going to be adults and they can sponsor mom and dad and their cousins and chain migration and, you know, the whole family comes over. 866-408-7669. We were just speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Alan West about that. But we were also talking to him about this gun legislation that they're working on, gun control, or as the left now calls it, gun safety. They don't say gun control because they know that the right, you know, kind of puts their back up about that. Like, wait, what? So they call it gun safety now. And that's what they're talking about. But an excellent piece by ABC News that asserts that, according to experts that they interviewed, these proposed federal gun safety measures wouldn't have prevented the Uvalde shooting. And you heard Lieutenant Colonel West talk about, well, they want to do this, they want to do this. But the way that the Uvalde shooter got his guns, none of this would have been prevented by that. So you wind up with a question, well, as Lieutenant Colonel Alan West pointed out, you know, we need to fix the system we already have in place. We know that mistakes were made in pretty much all of these school shootings. Someone didn't close a door, although in Uvalde, apparently the teacher did close the door, but it's supposed to auto lock, and it didn't. It had been broken for a while, and they knew it, but they were going to fix it. Never got around to it.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. Brian down in Virginia, looking at the primaries down there, having some nice diner food. Some people in Richmond. 866-408-7669 is the number if you would want to join in. We were just speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, and he was talking about the border and what is happening down there and the number of people coming across. It's mind-boggling. You're talking about the population of entire cities that have now been dispersed throughout the United States. Majority of them, you know, obviously there's no COVID testing going on. Some of them are COVID tested, but the majority aren't. And they're putting them on planes and into your towns and into school with your kids, and you're going to pay for it. And we now know that not only is Texas, but also Arizona sending busloads of these people to Washington, D.C. Now, they were going to drop them off in front of the White House, but most of them are going to Union Station, where a lot of them are getting on buses and heading elsewhere. The number one destination is New York, number two, New Jersey, and I think the other one is Florida, but I'm not 100% sure with three. But they sent 79 buses full of illegals to Washington, D.C. But if they're leaving and they're not staying, it doesn't really affect Washington that much. And that's the last thing they want to talk about because, face it, Democrats play the long game. If they can bring 3 million people into this country illegally, it's well over a million now. If they can bring 3 million in the course of 4 years into this country, they know that down the road, 5 years from now even, Republicans aren't going to be able to deport all these people. They're not getting deported. These people are here to stay, and Democrats know that because they're going to play the, this is the only life they know. They don't know anything about fill in the home country, China, Italy, wherever it happens to be that they're coming from. Over 160 countries being represented. They're not going to be deported. And what do they think? Guess what? 3 million new Democrat voters. That's what they're doing. Because they can't sell their ideas to the American people, but they can import people who are used to living under these conditions to get them to vote for it. And they'll be rewarded for bringing them into this country. That's what they're thinking. The other thing we were discussing is this gun bill. That it's a bipartisan bill, and they're hashing it out. The sticking point right now, according to reports, is this boyfriend loophole, also known as red flag laws. And a lot of people are against red flag laws, and I think for good reason. Your right to due process is gone. You are judged guilty, a possible threat, so they're going to come and take away your guns. They're going to strip you of your Second Amendment rights right away. And then you have to prove your innocence. That's not the way the system is supposed to work. And I see room for a lot of abuse with this. 866-408-7669. In North Carolina, Brad, you are on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
How are you, Mary?
I'm doing good. So you wanted to talk about the school shootings.
Real quick correlation between these school shootings and a lot of the things we see going on with the young men in our nation. I'm 37 years old, 85 born, and I watched the transition of what's going on with the high school, you know, like the previous caller you had that sent her son off to the all-male school and he came out and whatnot. The situation I'm seeing is this. Since 1966, every active shooter we've had, if you do a toxicology report, these kids are on some type of antidepressant, antipsychotic. You know, these kids are on drugs, man. And I'm not talking illegal drugs. I'm talking pharmaceuticals. The main problem we're facing is, as a nation as a whole, I'm a parent of three. Instead of spending more time with our kids, all I see is, you know, throw the phone in their face, throw the tablet in their face, you know, pay, give them something to do to get them out of my hair so I can go do what I need to do. The problem is we're breeding a generation of kids that aren't raised right. You know, like I said, if you look at the toxicologies on the shooters, every one of these kids, you know, show me what drugs they were on. And that's a telltale sign of what was going on with their mental status, the mental instability of the kids in this nation.
That's a great point. And I hear a lot about that these kids are on a lot of behavioral drugs. I think the point was made also by that woman that, you know, we don't allow boys to be boys. And I think that's so true. Behavior that is typical of young boys. And I see
Absolutely.
It, you know, with my nieces and nephews, the girls love to build things. And they have a really good attention span and they play quietly. And then the boys come in and just like plow through it and wreck it. Right. Like, that's just
absolutely. Absolutely. And they're interested in hunting and fishing and masculine things that that we're now telling our kids in society are not supposed to be, you know, don't celebrate your masculinity. Don't celebrate being a man or manhood. And I feel like, you know, if it's going to be equal rights for everyone, then the men should have the same playing field. And lastly, I want to touch on, Alan, what Colonel West said there about the guns. Furthermore, when you get MS-13 to turn in all of their firearms, then the legal patriots of this nation will turn in theirs. I mean, the thing about it is the only thing that these red flag laws and these other gun laws are doing is protecting the criminals. The patriots of this nation are going to be punished and lose their ability to defend themselves. And we're facing a massive border crisis right now, which unfortunately is what this administration is seemingly playing out when what they're looking for.
And I will go one step further and polish my tinfoil hat and say, yes, but disarming the legal gun owners is the purpose of all of this. They know darn well. And thank you. I appreciate you kicking it off, Brad. I think that the politicians know darn well that these laws that they pass piece by piece and they whittle away a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more, they know that it's not going to stop the shootings in Chicago and all these other inner cities where people are being shot, you know, 10, 20 people every weekend. They know it's not going to stop that because they know those guns are illegally owned. They know that. But that's not what they're trying to stop. This is about, in my humble opinion, making it harder for law-abiding citizens to defend themselves. And then they tell you that you're dependent on the police department. And what are they doing to the police department? And no offense to cops, but they can't be everywhere, number one. And if you're defunding them, a lot of them, there's a city, we just found out last week that they've run out of money because they don't have enough money for gas. So they're doing remote police calls. And they only send somebody out if it's like a real emergency. But those people who are making those laws enjoy security armed to the hilt, who are allowed to carry weapons that you and I are not allowed to have to defend ourselves, and because they're private security. So what they're doing is they've already stripped the African-American population and the poor of their ability to protect themselves, unless they choose to do it illegally, because the left tells us that black people don't have IDs. Right. And poor people don't have IDs and you need an ID to get a firearm. So right then and there, they're out of the game. They also have to pay for fingerprinting and background checks and everything else. They can't afford it. So right then and there, according to from what the left says about the black population and the poor population. So they right there, they're out of the game. They cannot legally defend themselves. The only option they have is to illegally. obtain a firearm to defend themselves. That's number one. So they're working on everybody else. This red flag law, in my humble opinion, opens up a can of worms that allows the left to target people, you know, the Karen on your street who has her, you know, all lives matters. You know, like, did you ever see those signs? They're black. I believe black lives matter. I believe science is real. I believe that gender's fluid, that thing. She's the one who, she knows her neighbor who flies the Trump flag has guns. So, or she thinks it is. So she calls the police and say, I think he's he threatened me. He's a menace. He has firearms. And then they go to him. He gets tagged by red flag. They come and they take his guns. He's now going to pay for a lawyer to prove his innocence. And it can take forever to get his firearms back. So I see where this can be abused in a large way. And I think it's a very, very dangerous thing. I want safety. I don't want kids dying in school. But I think there are other ways to prevent that from happening that's not being discussed. 866-408-7669. Jim in Portland, Oregon, listening on Freedom 970. Hi, Jim.
Oh, hi, Mary. I think that these red flag laws, it's like designing a car without brakes. And it's that wouldn't be allowed in automobile safety, but they're trying to push it through. I thought of one other thing. There was a case where citizens did defend themselves in Northfield, Minnesota. The Jesse James gang made a business trip, went to rob a bank, and they got repulsed. And I think it was by the citizens of Northfield, Minnesota at large. And I wish people would remember that.
Well, and you know what? There are a lot more even recent ones, for instance, and I'm glad you reminded me of this, Jim. The Philadelphia Inquirer is reporting that justifiable homicides are rising in Philly as concealed carry surges in that city. They listed three recent incidents in which individuals who were legally carrying concealed shot and killed their assailants. They observed that homicides jumped 67% from 2020 to 2021. 22 is on pace to surpass the number of justifiable homicides witnessed just last year. So you don't even have to go that far back, Jim, and thank you for bringing that up. You don't have to go that far back because, you know, the left got that was the Wild West. You know, we're not the Wild West. We're much more civilized and on and on. But look at what's happening in Philadelphia, which makes me wonder how many people in places where you can't carry, for instance, like New Jersey, New York, California, these other states, Washington, D.C. I wonder how many people would feel safer and be safer if they could conceal carry. And don't tell me that the word doesn't go out amongst the criminal element that a lot of people are carrying now in Philadelphia. And you start to see maybe a drop. In 2021, the number of concealed carry permits in Philly skyrocketed to over 70,000. And those people are not just shooting people willy-nilly. Justifiable homicides. 866-408-7669. Believe me, I wish I lived in a world in which I wouldn't need to carry all the time. But unfortunately, if we don't prosecute crime and we keep letting criminals out of jail over and over and over again, or they get convicted and we let them out on bail over and over again, or just don't require bail and just let them walk with a promise that they're going to come back, we're at a greater risk. That's just the way the world is. I'll get more of your calls coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
There's no topic he won't touch, and there's no opinion he won't engage.
One of the great joys of my life.
Call in with yours at 866-408-7669. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade, 866-408-7669. Talking about this gun legislation that they're working on, you know, and some people say, well, Republicans are caving. Why are we going to even do this? None of this would have stopped the Uvalde shooting. And when you have ABC putting out a piece saying, yeah, we interviewed a bunch of experts and they say that the proposed federal gun safety measures probably wouldn't have prevented the Uvalde shooting. What are we doing? What are we doing? Now, I give the Republicans credit. They are pushing for mental health issues, you know, for some more resources in our schools to get more guidance counselors, right? We need more guidance counselors in school. We have an epidemic you almost said pandemic, I don't know, but an epidemic of kids in school and especially in college reporting over 75% of kids in college saying that they've had some kind of mental health episode in college. So our kids are hurting, and I think that's why you're seeing these shootings, in my personal opinion. We're not taking care of that. And you can put as many laws as you want on the books. Criminals don't follow the law. I know it's shocking. Let's go to Mark on Staten Island listening on WABC. Mark, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Good morning. First of all, I'd rather live in the wild, wild west. Second of all, there are already over 20,000 gun-related laws in this country, okay? And this thing about mental health, you know, if something is not in the instant check system, you know, these records are sealed. The doctors say it's all confidential, blah, blah, blah. You can't have the information. So how can a gun dealer look at a guy and instantly know that he's nuts when he's not acting nuts and it's not on his record? He, you know, what can he do?
Well, and that's the point. That's what they say in this piece from ABC, is that it contains the framework for this law, has six proposals focusing on mental health and three gun-specific proposals. And the experts say that, you know, the measures that are already in place wouldn't prevent the Uvalde shooting. And that's where we walk this fine line of mental health records being private. But I know in New Jersey, when you apply to purchase a weapon or to get your firearms ID card, you have to give them permission to access your mental health records, or you don't get it. So you have to give up your right to privacy in that sense in order to get to even get your firearms ID card. And if I'm wrong on that, somebody can correct me, and I'm sure you will. But I'm pretty sure that that's one of the things that you have to do. I don't know what the answer is, but Mark, and thank you for your call. I appreciate you joining me. Mark, here's the thing. The vast majority of people who are legal gun owners are not committing these crimes, right? And these shootings, whether it's in Chicago and it's four here or Philadelphia with two there or a school, they're being carried out by the same group of people, young men. That's the common thread, yet we refuse to look at that. Why? Why? Maybe that's what we should be doing. Maybe that's what we should be looking at. And, in, you know, Uvalde, the guy had the gun legally. Chicago and Philadelphia, it's usually illegal handguns. But I would say probably 98%, 99% of legal gun owners in this country, their guns never get up and commit a crime. Doesn't happen. So I'm glad that they're focusing on mental health with six proposals focusing on mental health. I think that's a good thing. But I don't know if what they're focusing on or how they're focusing on it is the answer. Let's quickly go to Gary in York, PA. Gary, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Got 2 minutes. Hi.
Hey, Mary, I make it really quick. I'm a handgun instructor, and I own my own business, Point Blank Defense. Here's the question I have. You're right. The whole due process is upside down. But talking about mental health, we've trained close to 3,000 students, which involves particularly veterans. Now, some of those have dealt with PTS, and let's just say they're on an antidepressant. And there are a number of people who are not veterans who are on an antidepressant. They have no priors. Where is the line? Mm-hmm. That's the danger in all of this. You could have somebody who was on antidepressant in their background. Well, they're dealing with mental illness. That's what will come up on their record. And once again, these folks have no priors, but let's wait and see in the litmus test who they go after. There's no boundaries, and the whole process, as you said, is upside down, due process.
That is such an excellent point, Gary. Thank you for bringing that up. You know, we have an entire generation. If you watch any of the shows, you know, that's geared towards the 2030 crowd, they're all on some kind of medication, whether it's boys for on Ritalin for ADHD, whether it's the stuff for antidepression, whatever it happens to be, they all seem to be on some kind of medication. It's an entire generation. So maybe this is the way of just slowly weeding out people who would have access to firearms generationally, because in the future, the vast majority of them are going to be locked out because 20 years ago, you were on some kind of medication. I think that that's an excellent point. That just is a whole nother layer to this. But if we if we continue to go after the wrong thing, you're going to keep going down this rabbit hole, right? You're just going to keep going down this spiral of chasing your tail almost. And these shootings are going to continue to happen. Shockingly, nothing they pass is going to have an effect on the outcome in our inner cities of the skyrocketing homicides with firearms. And also in New York, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, walking across the street, some psycho is going to come up and just stab you. You saw that 2 weeks ago. None of it's going to change. And they're going to sit there, and those in Washington inside the bubble, and they're going to scratch their heads, and they're not going to understand it because they all have private security paid for by you and me, and they can't understand why everyone's so violent. I'm Mary Walter. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News Radio studios in New York City, giving you opinions and facts with a positive approach, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Yes, I'm Mary Walter sitting in for Brian Kilmeade today. 866-408-7669 is my number if you would like to join in. I'd like to take this time, though, to speak with General Jack Keane. He's a retired four-star general, the chairman of the Institute for the Study of War, and Fox News senior strategic analyst, and I like to say a very nice man. General Keane, thank you for joining me.
Oh, great, Mary. Always good to be here with you and your audience. Thank you.
I love having you. There's so much that I wanted to cover with you. One of the things that I wanted to cover first is President Biden talking about going to meet with the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. He's supposed to be going to Saudi Arabia next month. And he famously said during the debates that he would treat the Saudi Arabia as a pariah over the murdering of the Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi. But now he's singing a different tune because he has to go beg them for oil. If you were advising him, would you tell him to go over to speak and meet with the Crown Prince?
Yeah, absolutely. I really believe that the Biden administration, when they came in, dealing with foreign policy and national security, what I pay attention to, you know, began, I think, correctly to build on some of the strengths of President Trump had put into his policy dealing with China. And they were certainly attempting to also strengthen NATO and Europe. But I believe he's completely strategically misguided dealing with the Middle East. And here's why. We've had a relationship with Saudi Arabia for 80 years, began by President Roosevelt during World War II. It has transitioned through 14 presidents, Republicans and Democrats. And it has always operated, Mary, at what I refer to as the intersection of national security and what is in the best interest for the United States, and also a concern for American values because they're very different in Saudi Arabia. And our presidents, through those 80 years, have had to try to find a balance to make this relationship work. And the Biden administration came in, and because of the Khashoggi affair, referred to the MBS as an international pariah, was attempting to isolate him, shut down the military assistance that was coming to Saudi Arabia, having been programmed by the Trump administration, did the same thing to the UAE. And of course, that military assistance is principally there to counter the Iranian hegemonic desires to take over the Middle East. But at the same time, in the very first 30 to 40 days, the Biden administration is reaching out to Iran, not to the Arabs, not to Israel, but to Iran, to go back and reformulate the 2015 very flawed deal. I thought these actions was strategically significantly off from what should have been done. And listen, the Khashoggi affair is horrific, and there's no way around the morality issue associated with that. But to let that horrific offense impact national security and the security of the American people and the stability and peace in the Middle East is misguided, in my judgment. It's not that you don't hold them accountable, but you don't let it define our foreign policy and national security relationship with this regime. And he's going to meet with MBS, whose mom had been Salman, short version of it. And he's also going to meet with the leaders of the Gulf states. And what he's going to hear from them is Iran, Iran, and Iran, because that is the major threat that they are dealing with in the region. And they want the United States involved in this and the United States' commitment to it. They have other choices, and they've been making those choices. They've been reaching out to Russia and to China because they feel there's, the United States created a vacuum here, and they're very concerned about their own security. So I do think that this is a good step. Listen, the reason I understand the hand is out to get oil prices in a better oil production in a better place. We could do that significantly at home, but that's another issue. But the real purpose of the visit, from my perspective, is to return a relationship to something that's meaningful in our ability to counter the Iranian threat.
Now, but they did not. The Saudi Arabians initially rebuffed President Biden when he first reached out to them about a year ago. Remember, they wouldn't take his phone call. So what has changed?
Well, I think that is reported to be what has happened. I don't know if that indeed is the case.
Okay.
I think the reason for that is because of the rhetoric that the president was using in reference to the regime itself, in referring to them as an international pariah and stiffing them on the military assistance that we were supposed to provide to them. So, yes, in terms of their reaction to something like that, they care deeply about the United States. A few weeks ago, I met with Mohammed bin Salman's brother, Prince Khalid, who's their deputy defense minister and also their ambassador here in the United States. I met with them while he was visiting the United States and asked them very much about this relationship. And there is no doubt in their mind how important the relationship is with the United States for their own security in the region and stability. And they certainly recognize the United States' interest in the very same thing in the region. And I think they're going to put some pressure on the president, and it'll likely come from the Gulf states as well. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't ask for the president so that they can be under the security nuclear umbrella of the United States, much as NATO is, and also Japan and South Korea are in the Far East, dealing with Russia and China. I don't believe we would concede to that initially, but I certainly understand why the Gulf states and Mohammed bin Salman from Saudi Arabia would bring that up, given right. The fact that Iran is on what looks like a rapid pathway to a nuclear weapon.
Yeah. I would like to also talk about Ukraine, because we're hearing reports, and I saw them over the weekend, that apparently the United States says we're going to send them these rocket launchers, but we're only going to send them certain ones. But they're being delayed, and apparently we have like 80 of them in Germany, but they're not being moved to Ukraine. What is the delay with this administration?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I was in the Pentagon a couple of weeks ago, and I think I have an answer that I didn't have then. We've done some really good work in getting weapons to them. As an example for our audience, 27,000 anti-tank weapons. I mean, that is a staggering amount that we've been able to deliver, not just Javelin, but other forms of anti-tank weapons and thousands of Stingers, etc. But when the Ukrainians began to ask Mary for advanced weapon systems, particularly to deal with Russian artillery, they wanted howitzers, air defense systems, and then they wanted rocket launchers, because it's the Russian rocket launchers that have the range that are outgunning the Ukrainian artillery. When those weapon systems got asked, as opposed to just more Javelins or more Stingers or some more drones, and because it was different and it was an advanced weapon system, it went into the national security process of the interagency. And there's people there who are representing different agencies that are very concerned about the war being escalated by virtue of the kind of weapons we're giving the Ukrainians, and that it could provoke Putin into that escalation and delay the decision for a number of weeks. And it happened more than once with howitzers first and then with rocket launchers. And that's really unfortunate that we don't have a clear policy statement that we're going to give the Ukrainians the weapon systems they need to prosecute this war. And I don't see any issue here with provoking Putin into escalation based on giving them artillery weapons or rocket launchers that can use the same range and likely lethality that the Russians already have and are already using. I think it was a false issue and unnecessary delay. Then the second issue is with the HIMARS, which are they're not. What people see on television, the truck-mounted rockets that come out of the back of a truck out of cylinders and are fired very rapidly, we're giving them a much more sophisticated precision-guided munition that brings a certain amount of weight to it and has a significant range to it in excess of 50 miles. So it requires some training. And the training is ongoing as we speak, and that's the reason for the delay. And I think the training can be done very quickly, but it does take some time. They are training artillerymen in Ukrainian military already familiar with the kind of system, but not that particular system. But listen, we're at a tipping point here, Mary. You see what's happening in the war. You Russians are making some steady incremental progress. The Ukrainians are inflicting significant casualties on them. They're taking more casualties themselves. They want to be able to stop the Russian gains and go on the counteroffensive. They've got the skill to do it. They've got the will to do that. They've got the people to do it. They just need the weapons, and that is the tipping point. Yeah. We've got to get these weapons to them in the numbers they desire. Listen, we're only providing four of these rocket precision-guided munitions to them. The Brits are only providing three. The Germans are only providing three. What Zelensky and his generals want is somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 to 60 to be able to do this correctly. So we have got to upgun ourselves, and hopefully that last meeting that Secretary Austin had last week in Brussels with the 40-something nations, I hope he was pounding the table and telling them that we got to get these weapons to them now and in the quantities that they need.
Now, yeah. I have about a minute and a half here. Very quickly, you had General Sir Patrick Sanders from the United Kingdom. He is the new army chief there, and he warned that British soldiers, hard for me to say, must prepare to fight in Europe once again, and a lot of people are saying that that could be a warning about the spread of this war. I've got about a minute and a half. What do you think he was saying there?
Well, I think what he's saying is that if the Russians are able to succeed here, by succeed, keep hundreds of thousands of soldiers in Ukraine over time because the war is stalemated and devastate Ukraine economically, there's likely a geopolitical win here for Russia at the expense of the United States and NATO, who supposedly are all in to help the Ukrainians defeat the Russians. If that's the outcome, that will encourage Putin to go further. And he clearly has his eye on the Baltics and particularly Lithuania as a next step. Certainly Moldova, non-aligned country, would be on that list as well. But I think that's the omen that he sees in the future. We cannot sit on our laurels here and think that based on the Ukrainian military's bravery that all of this is going to work out to our satisfaction. It's not. We got a protracted war in our hand, and there is huge danger out there for the U.S. National security interests as well as the Brits and Europe writ large.
Yeah, it's almost as if he's learning from history and Second World War with Chamberlain versus Churchill, et cetera. And you see a lot of the history repeating itself here. And we have an option this time around to learn from history and do something different. General Jack Keane, got to let you go. Thank you so much for joining me. It's always a pleasure when I get to speak with you.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. That's a great analogy, by the way.
Thank you. 866-408-7669. Well, that just made my day. 866-408-7669. I've got your calls coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm Mary Walter sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. 866-408-7669 is my number. Having a conversation about the red flag law, the boyfriend loophole, as they're calling it, in this negotiation, this bipartisan negotiation over gun control in the wake of the Uvalde shooting. But there are things that they had protocol in place in Uvalde, and it wasn't all followed. You know, that door that the teacher had propped open, we find out now, that's not how he came. He came in through that door, but the teacher had closed that door. But it's supposed to automatically lock, and it didn't because it had been broken for a while. Now, that's the latest report that I had seen. Who knows? That could change again because this story keeps changing about what happened there. We know that the officers, it was almost an hour before they finally went into the classroom. So there's protocols in place. If we don't follow the protocol, none of this matters. You put all the laws on the books you want, but criminals have a nasty habit of not following the laws. And in schools, if we're not going to follow the safety protocols, then what's the point? It doesn't matter. It's just a waste of money. But we should take money. We should harden our schools. There's all this COVID money sitting in all these school districts that was never used. We should be putting in state-of-the-art security, surveillance, locked doors, one entrance in. There are so many things that we could do. Let's give our kids the same security that they have at a jewelry store or Congress or the Kardashians. Let's go to Brooklyn. Alex listening on WABC. Hi, Alex. You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking the call. You know, actually, you just said that they should put the money for the security of the schools. Another thing that we could do with the COVID money, you know, Obama gave out phones, Obama phones. We should be handing out tasers to the American people so they should be able to defend themselves. But I wanted to say the Democrats not only want that the American people shouldn't be able to defend themselves, they want the criminals should be able to defend themselves. Because if they really wanted to stop the shootings going on in this country, they would first go after cracking down on the black market and illegal gun trading before they go after law-abiding citizens. Because if you just ban laws and you don't really enforce the laws that are in place, before you go further on and make illegal for a law-abiding citizen to get a gun, the only ones that are going to abide by the law are law-abiding citizens, not the criminals. So you're really defending and helping the criminals defend themselves by taking the guns away from us. And in England, they have very few shootings every year, but they have a lot of stabbings over there. And, you know, Democrats say that the reason why they have those few shootings every year over there is because they banned guns. And it's not true. The reason why they have the shootings so low there is because they crack down on the black market and illegal gun trading. And really, the people in England should be able to have guns and defend themselves from the stabbings that are going on over there. So we should be doing the same thing. We should enforce our laws before making new laws and, you know, squaring in and putting the law-abiding citizens in this tight position where they can't secure themselves. The Democrats want also to defund the police, and they just want to help the criminals.
Yeah, you know, the other thing we could do, thank you so much, Alex. The other thing we could do is if we secured our border, we wouldn't have this illegal gun running coming across the border, or the fentanyl trade, the illegal drug trade, that also helps to spur this illegal gun trade. I'm Mary Walter, and you're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm Mary Walter sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. If you'd like to join me, 866-408-7669 is my number. So we've been talking about the red flag laws that, you know, apparently are going to be in this compromised bipartisan bill. But I also... and this is where it gets me because, you know, Republicans, I think, give a lot. Republicans cave a lot. Republicans will always, you know, they work. They don't play hardball. And the Democrats do. And I want to draw that into this conversation. And I want to go to let's go to cut 15, if you don't mind, Eric. I want to draw that into this conversation because Republicans drive me crazy. And this is why I am not a registered Republican, because the Republican Party seems to disappoint me at every single turn, right? It's Charlie Brown and the football. I keep saying, like, they promise me every so many years that if you vote for us, we're going to do blah, 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 blah. And I'm waiting to see what comes out with the gun law. I'm waiting to see what comes out with this package before I judge it. But I just don't have high hopes that the Republicans are going to stand firm on this and that they're going to, quote unquote, compromise, and law-abiding gun owners are going to lose more rights while criminals will still roam the streets armed to the teeth and not be prosecuted for it. So this is James Comer out of Kentucky, and he was on CBS on the Takeout podcast. And here's, I want you to hear what he said. The promises are starting to come, not just for the left, but also for the right. Listen to what he had to say here.
You're the chairman. Mm-hmm. Hypothetically, what's the first item you take up for investigative business for the Oversight Committee?
Well, we're already doing the groundwork for investigations in January. We've been all over the Hunter Biden issue. One reason we think Hunter Biden... Hunter Biden's first. We've just compiled an amazing amount of information with respect to wrongdoing from Hunter Biden. It started out as a probe of Hunter Biden. Now it's expanded into the entire Biden family.
Mm-hmm. So that, well, you vote for me, and you know what we're going to do if we take control, we're going to go after Hunter Biden. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. I just don't buy it. You've got McConnell and McCarthy, and the two of them, I think, are very detrimental to what the base of the Republican Party wants. We would love to see Hunter Biden investigated, because if that were Don Jr., the Democrats would have spent $40 million and public hearings and, you know, bread and circuses for the masses in order to make sure that that happened. And I just don't see that the Republicans will do that. And he was talking to Major Garrett there. He went on to say, I believe that his son is corrupt. He accused Hunter Biden of profiting off of his last name. He accused Joe Biden of protecting his son's interests. And he said any father would probably do that. But the problem is Hunter Biden's a national security threat. Do you have faith that the Republicans will stand strong on pretty much anything? Not just this gun law, not just that compromise gun law that they're gun laws that they're coming out with, this package of comprehensive gun reform. Do you have faith that the Republicans will stand strong? And do you have faith that should we give them the House, maybe the Senate in November, that they will stand strong and do something like investigate Hunter Biden and really do it? You do have some. You have Chuck Grassley and Ron Johnson. Quiet guys, but they have been working this, and they now are accusing the DOJ of blocking their efforts to get answers on this Hunter Biden investigation. There's apparently one going on. He has been charged. He's under investigation for tax evasion and also for possible foreign lobbying violations under FARA, the Foreign Agents Registration Act. And they try to get out, find out what's going on with it, and they've been stonewalled by the DOJ. So as long as you have that swamp, and I don't think McCarthy and McConnell are willing to fight the swamp, I think they're quite happy living in the swamp. I don't have faith that this is going to get done. There's some others they said they were going to investigate as well. I'll tell you who that is coming up. 866-408-7669 is my number. Let's go to Florida and say hello to Brian. You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hey, good morning. How are you today?
Doing great.
Yeah, good. Just a couple of things here I want to say. First of all, about the shootings. These kids that are shooting kids, it's not only the problems that they have, but they're being bullied while they were in school. The bullies can really psychologically hurt and impair someone's reality of thinking, and that's when the parents need to get involved. But I don't think enough is being said about these kids that are being bullied. They have nowhere to go. I, being bullied myself in school, I couldn't stand it. It was very hard, depressing, and suicidal tendencies and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they're just taking acts on that. The second thing I want to say is that, you know, if these immigrants coming, illegal immigrants coming into our country, if they don't register and bring themselves to be an American citizen, how can they vote for anybody?
And well, last time I checked, all they have to do is fill out a ballot that happens to come to the address at which they're living. I know people who live in Washington, D.C., and during the last round, one of them received 5 ballots to his address. So, you know, if you're in the country illegally and you get that and you're not scrupulous, what's to prevent you from filling that out and sending it in?
Good point. But they're coming across this border, and then their court date where they're supposed to show up and have their residency looked at. They never show. I haven't heard of one illegal immigrant that has showed up to their court date. As many of them as I think it's the first 25,000, nobody showed up under that 25,000 that was supposed to have their court date. And I just found that rather, you know, ridiculous, knowing that, you know, we're going to let them in. But, you know, I mean, they're not even showing up. So.
Right. Well, and that's the joke of it. And the Democrats know they're not going to show up. And that's the point of it. They don't care if they show up. They just want to get them into the country so that 5-10 years down the road, when their children have been born in this country and the parents, you don't want to separate the parents from the children, despite them, you know, coming in illegally and every excuse in the book, blah, blah, blah. We wind up with 3 million more people who are now going to get amnesty. And this is just, and they're going to be on a path to citizenship. Happens continually over and over and over again because Democrats think that they will vote for them. That's the game. Brian, you know, Brian, are you still there? Did we get rid of, he's still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay,
yes,
very ma'am. Quickly, because I don't want to take a lot of time, but very quickly, you talked about bullying in school, and I find this fascinating because I think everybody gets bullied at some point in time in school. Everybody's had their, you know, for whatever reason, you know, I wore glasses in second grade and that was the bane of my existence. But you know, you were bullied and we've all been through it, I think, to varying degrees. Why is it now with this generation, though, that the only way they see out is going to school with a firearm and killing a lot of people or killing themselves? Why is that? What has changed in basically a generation when it comes to bullying?
My opinion is because it all starts at home with the parents. If they are not getting any type of upbringing, you know, with their parents, they're shying away. They're sitting in their rooms. They're not doing anything. And that's what happened with Dylan Klebold and his partner with Columbine. They were tired of this going on, and that's why they were in their garage making a plan because the parents weren't around. I think, like you said earlier, about an hour ago, you know, the parents are just brushing them off, you know, to where they just, you know, okay, well, hurry up and do this so I can do what I need to do. That's so true. They just don't pay enough attention to them. Since I've grown up and I'm a dad now, my son gets 100% of my attention besides work and my wife.
I wanted to get that. Thank you so much. I appreciate you answering that question. Thank you. Let's go to New Jersey. Ben, listening on WPG. Ben, you're on the Brian Carter.
Hey, Mary.
You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hey.
Good. Doing well.
Yeah, doing it. Hey, that last call was a beautiful segue to what I wanted to talk about. And, you know, we heard Kamala Harris in the recent past talking about root causes of immigration problems going down to Central America. Well, of course, she really didn't get anything done. I want to talk briefly about what I think are root causes of these shootings. And it's something that all of these legislators have been talking around and ignoring. And that has to do with what the previous caller talked about, which is the importance of fathers in the home. Father's Day was 2 days ago.
Yep.
We got to deal with this short term and long term. The short term, a couple of the ideas that they're talking about with this legislation, giving schools more security and hardening them is good. Mental health issues through the roof. We need to get on that.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to have a culture that says fathers are good. They're necessary. They're important. Because if you look at the profiles of these young men, primarily who have done these shootings, you look at their backgrounds, look at their family situations, and inevitably you're going to find problems. Abuse, no father there,
mm-hmm.
drug use, all kinds of things. That's the root cause. That's the long-term solution. Unfortunately, we're going to have more of these shootings. So we got to do some short-term stuff, but more gun restrictions are not going to help. I'm a father, a grandfather, former police officer, and firearms instructor, and I've never seen any law-abiding gun shoot anybody.
Exactly. I tell the story all the time. I'm old enough to remember when, you know, hunting season, where I grew up, hunting season, the first day of deer season, there was nobody in school. And throughout the season, you know, you'd see in the senior parking lot all the pickup trucks. And this is in New Jersey. And they all had the gun rack, and they all had their gun, you know, their rifle on the back of the or shotgun in the rack at the back. And none of those guns ever came out of the senior parking lot and killed anybody. It was amazing. But you
exactly.
bring up a good point, and I'm so glad you brought up that point, because I agree with you 100%. We devalue men in our society, period. It starts when they're kids in school and they're told that they are privileged and that the girls are underprivileged, and we see the girls perform and excel because we build them up and build them up and build them up. But instead of just building the girls up, we push the boys down. And that's why I think we have a very angry generation of young men, and it is a ticking time bomb, and we are just starting to see the effects of that. Ben, thank you for joining me, and thank you for listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show. Your call is 866-408-7669. I'm Mary Walter, in for Brian Kilmeade.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We're in danger of becoming a party of the very high and the very low. If you pull out the working class, you've got people who are very well educated and very well off. Those people talk funny. Latinx, I've never met a Latinx. I've never met a BIPOC. I've never met, you know, all this weird stuff that these highly educated people say is bizarre. Nobody talks that way at the barbershop, the nail salon, the grocery store, the community center. But that's how we talk now. So that's weird. And then the people who are very low down on the economic ladder need a bunch of stuff. You wind up over-promising, oh, we're going to give you reparations to people at the bottom of the economic ladder, talking weird to appeal to people at the top of the economic ladder, and the working class walks away from you. That is the danger we're facing.
I thought you'd do get a little bit of good news here, right? Van Jones on CNN slamming Democrats for talking weird. You heard him to working class voters, and he's saying that Democrats are losing the middle class. And you saw that with Trump. You saw the working class, the people who, you know, the Democrats always say the blue collar workers were, you know, they were the champion of the blue collar workers. And they're really not. You know, they're also the champion of the African-American and the poor. They're really not. They're actually very, very racist. Democrat policies are phenomenally racist, assuming that because you're black, well, you don't have an ID. You know, black people don't have ID, so we can't have, you know, you're disenfranchising black people from voting. Wait, what? Every black person I know has an ID. How do they, and if they're very poor, how do they sign up for all of these programs that they need without ID? How do they go to the hospital without ID? Stop it. And Bill Maher, who, let me tell you, Bill Maher is becoming more, I think he's a Democrat. I think he's what the Democrat Party used to be, like Van Jones was just talking about. Here he is talking about that demise of that Democrat in the middle.
If Biden does step down, or say he's going to step down, then the Democrats have, I mean, we've all noticed this, a problem, like, but who?
Right.
And he mentioned, who is there, Bill Clinton, who's going to come along? And I thought, okay. Well, Clinton and Obama, obviously the last two successful Democrats. Is there a Bill Clinton or Barack Obama out there? Or is such a broadly centrist Democrat no longer even really possible?
I think he's right. It's a great question. Is that even possible? Now, there are some on the right who are asking that question as well. Is there such a thing as a centrist Republican? You know, you got this MAGA Republican. But I kind of wonder if that quote-unquote MAGA Republican that so many people say with such disdain, super MAGA, you know, Joe Biden, that's kind of middle America. That is the people who work, who do the right thing, who responsibly own guns, who show ID when they go to vote. You know, those are the people who believe in, you know, having, leave me alone. Just let me live my life and I won't bother anybody and I want to work hard and I want to succeed. Those are the people who believe in the American dream, right? Am I wrong? 866-408-7669. Sean, listening on WDBO in Orlando. You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi, Sean.
Hey, how you doing today? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Like a couple of your callers, I'm a firearms instructor of a combat man, spent 15 years overseas. And when you come home and you find your country less and less free, it kind of eats at your soul. And you see that we're at a point in time that people, when you see a shooting like it would happen in Texas or at a church or at a shopping market, and the first thing we go after is an inanimate object, and people are willing to give their rights up just to get a sense of security, which is never going to come because they never address the issue. There's hundreds of issues that are leading to these events, and nobody's addressing any of them, let alone all of them. And it would take days, if not weeks, to discuss. You know, so it's like we just keep putting Band-Aids on a cancer, and nothing's ever going to happen except the law-abiding are going to end up giving up a right, which, you know, most of us refuse. Most of us that swore oaths to defend that Constitution don't feel that there's a expiration date on it. And who wants – there was a cop on one of these TikTok pages or something that went to his city council and said the very same thing I'm about to say. Do you want to be the first person through the door when they tell you to go and confiscate weapons? And I know what your listeners are thinking, but that's not what they're saying. Sure, in the beginning in the 1930s when the Nazi Party kicked up and they started confiscating guns, it didn't start with a full confiscation. It was a slow death by a thousand cuts. And this is what we're saying. Learn from history. This is why you should have the same hardware that the military has, or at least access to it, so you don't become a Ukraine. You know, I got family over there, and they're like, why are you guys trying to give up your rights? We're trying to beg for weapons. And I said, don't ask me. People are stupid. But because they think it'll never happen to them, not in my lifetime. Right.
Right. And the thing is, and thank you for your service. And I love hearing from people who have served, because you never really stop serving. You carry that with you, and you're such a special breed of people. I could never do what you do, so I have mad respect for it. But the politicians, and this is why I think that if I can't carry, if I can't buy an AR-15, for example, to protect my family, if I don't have that right, you as a politician, your security that I pay for should not be allowed to use an AR-15 to protect you. You are not more valuable than I. Your children, your family is not more valuable than mine. Same thing for all these people who have private security. If they should not, their private security should not be allowed to carry any weapons that I am not allowed to have as a law-abiding citizen. I think that's the only way you wind up with some sensible gun safety. I'm Mary Walter. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.